So, hey, Jerry, and welcome everybody who's watching and/or listening to the Purposefully Human Radio Hour. I'm Neil Woodson, and I'm here with my friend, Jerry Seifert, sometimes known as Coach Jerry. And Jerry, what's happened this week with you? What's going on with Jerry? And tell us a little bit what's happening out there.
Well, it's been kind of an interesting week, between the news, what's in the news, and but also some wonderful conversations to put an early pitch in for what's going on in the purposefully human world. Some wonderful conversations have been happening about AI in the purposefully human community, which has been so exciting to be part of. I've learned a ton, and everybody is having a delightful time bantering, what the implications of AI
Sure.
are and what have you. So that's kind of been a highlight of my week. And the other thing that has been a highlight is my ongoing, unfortunately, collection of purposefully inhuman stories. But I won't bore you with them right now. Like I've been telling people for a while now, once you're into the purposefully human mindset, you can't not see these, because they're everywhere. And it's only because we've gotten used to the world as we know it that we tolerate it. So it's been a really interesting week. How about yourself?
Well, it's I think it's always interesting things that happen and take place. I've been kind of doing the same thing, starting to notice more of the purposely inhuman stuff, and then trying to figure out how would we do it differently. But one of the things that I did notice, and it was this morning that I noticed, is something you posted on LinkedIn that I found very interesting. You posted something about powwows.
Oh.
Where did that come from? And just kind of just give us just a 2 second,
Oh
what's
yeah.
that about and where did it come from?
Thanks for asking. I am not native at all. I mean, I'm Northern European by heritage. But through my daughter, who does work with tribes in Idaho, I've gotten sensitized really to the life of the indigenous peoples of this country. I knew about the history, but I didn't know an awful lot about how these folks were living today. So I asked her, if I didn't know, are you telling me that most people don't? And she said, yeah, most people don't. So I said, well, what can I do? And she gave me like a list of websites and news services I could subscribe to. So I said, and then she said, well, what you can do is you can highlight a story every now and again, and make it known to your friends and colleagues. Just that would be, and so I thought, yeah, I can do that. So I signed up for the news services. And then I saw the one about the powwows, and I have attended a powwow or two in my time, and they're just such beautiful family-centered events, celebrations of culture and history and tradition. So I thought, well, I'll post this guide, and if over the course of the summer people get to one, then I will have done what she asked me to do, which is to share news of Native communities with my circles. Because if you go to one, you're going to get interested. You're going to be concerned about these folks, which after all are by treaty, they're separate government organizations. Most people don't understand that. So that's the origin of that. So I thought, I can do those two things. I can read the news services, and I can pick an item every week, and I can post it, and if something happens among the people that see it, I can feel good about my contribution.
Well, it jumped out at me because I saw it this morning, and it jumped out at me because on one side of my family, I do have Native background and a Cherokee Indian. So you'd never know it looking at me, but do have a little tiny little sliver of Cherokee. So
Yeah.
that jumped out at me. And so
So,
anyway,
by the way, Neil, before we move on, I've learned that that's really hurtful when non-native people say to natives, "You don't look Indian." And I had no idea. So something that to one group of people might just be an innocuous piece of a conversation can be deeply hurtful to someone else.
Well, what I was getting at is the vast majority of my makeup is European, is English and a little bit of German, you know. So, anyway, this is the Purposefully Human Radio Hour. And one thing I want to just touch on before we move to our guest is that this program does come to you from the Purposefully Human community. And that community is a group of people that's committed to creating a world where organizations act with more humanity in everything that they do. And I think the goal of this community is to get a conversation going that promotes the benefits of creating organizations that celebrate what it means to be human and what it means to behave more humanely. If you are interested, you can find out more at purposefullyhuman.com, or you can go to LinkedIn and just search for Purposefully Human and request to be a member of the group. And then just get active and start conversations to get people thinking and to maybe change some frame of minds a little bit, just to make the world a little bit better place. So that's kind of what Purposefully Human, the group, is about and where it goes. And, I think that's it as far as the news or anything that's out there for us. Let's get right to our guest. Today on our program, we have with us a friend of Jerry's, and Laurie and I have become a friend over about an hour and 15 minutes talking in a meeting. But we have with us Laurie Gray. She comes to us from, I believe, the Atlanta area, and I want to welcome her to the program. And there she is, Laurie Gray.
Hi.
And great, I can hear you. Can you hear us? Is everything good?
Yep. Audio, video, all
Testing,
good.
1, 2, 3.
Awesome. Well, welcome to the program, Laurie. I noticed something on LinkedIn about you. And I noticed in your LinkedIn profile, you describe yourself as a strategic, experienced, collaborative, adaptive, or adaptable human. And I just love the way you kind of phrase that and say it. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and just a little bit more about Laurie Gray?
Yeah, sure. So when I was searching for my last position, I gave my LinkedIn profile a complete overhaul. And what I was really doing at that point was just soul searching. Who am I? What do I do best? What am I the best in the room at doing? And so I arrived at those terms informed by my experience in consulting, my experience in user experience, my experience as a healthcare provider in a prior incarnation of my career. And those words just really seemed to resonate with really everything that I've done so far. So.
And I know you have a relation, you and Jerry have had a relationship, professional relationship for a while. What, Jerry, what, or either one of you, what's, how's that transpired and how did that all come about?
Yeah, I'll take that. I think the human word that I put in the description actually was very much inspired by Jerry, who introduced me to a small group cohort activity session series, I think, probably the best way to put it, with a group of fellow human-centered professionals. And we were coming from different directions and backgrounds and all of that. And I just think that this concept of human and humanity, humaneness is just so left out of current conversations. It needs to be reinserted. So that, I credit Jerry actually for the use of that particular word in my description.
Well,
Awesome.
and for my part, Lori, even before that, we had had some interactions over LinkedIn,
True.
and it was some of your own words that I think caused us to say, hey, we should like get together over lunch and
Sure
chat,
thing. Yeah, exactly.
and you know, it went from there.
Exactly.
Well, all of that leads me to my first. We're going to have the three kind of big questions to ask you, and then we'll get to some burning, short little burning questions later. But the first question, and we ask everybody these questions, but
Okay.
the first one is, what exactly does purposefully human mean to you? In other words, what's the definition? How do you define it? And can you give us an example so that we not only do we hear kind of your definition, but we
Yeah.
can see what's that look like in real life?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I from my perspective, it's a merging of empathy gained by or powered by the understanding of the context in which that person or those people are operating, right? And it's that intentional step of understanding what's going on with the people who are involved, again, in the context of wherever they're at. So, an example of that, and actually maybe a little bit of a backstory. Years ago, when I was getting started in user experience, I was really influenced by a woman named Donna Maurer, who is a UX professional in Australia, who actually wrote a book on the context of use. And it just really illustrated the point that you needed to understand what was happening in a particular environment or in that particular context of experience in order to design it well. And I'll give you an example. Going to an ATM to withdraw some money, and this happened to me recently. I had to block my card because of some fraudulent charges. And I put my card in and entered my PIN, and it said, "You can't do this here." Right. And that evokes an emotional response. Wait a minute, what's going on here? What? And then I had forgotten that I had blocked the card. As opposed to a successful transaction where you go and you enter in the PIN, it gives you the money back and you're on your way. Right. So understanding what was happening to my thoughts and emotions in the moment could influence a design decision.
I love the turn of phrase. I wrote down empathy powered by context.
Yeah.
And I love the intentional understanding. And it reminded me of something, and anybody that's done a workshop with me or taken a class with me has heard me talk about something I call the iceberg. And that is that when you meet people, you only see that top little bit and you
Completely.
don't see the bottom bit. And the bottom bit is gigantic, and
Yeah.
it includes all of that stuff that we bring with us, you know,
Exactly.
history, what happened this morning, what just happened on the beltway, you know, all of that junk gets pulled in. And I, because I've taught a lot of customer service classes and things, and people say, why are people such jerks? Well, they're not largely, they're just, it's life. You
Yeah.
know, they're bringing, everybody's dragging around all this stuff. And sometimes something just makes it snap, you know, and people
Yeah.
become somebody that they don't normally become. And we all do it, you know.
That's
But I
right.
love your idea of intentionally understanding, you know, and making that intentional. You know, I think it's something we don't often do and we need to do more of,
I agree.
especially today.
I agree. Yeah, I've said it in a slightly different way. Being a human is a messy business, right? To your point, we are dragging a lot of things around with us, good, bad, and otherwise, and no two of us are the same. And so, from a design perspective, we have to understand that and respect that and try and come up with patterns, right? Because I can't design interfaces for each individual person very easily or very effectively. But understand what the patterns are. So, if I'm designing software for a kitchen-based application, a commercial kitchen-based application, that's going to be high pace. There's going to be a lot of physical movement. There's going to be noise. There's going to be heat. There's going to be, things going wrong, right? Something catches fire. All you have to do is watch a Gordon Ramsay show to see kind of the scope of what all can go wrong there, right? But that's a very different experience than if I'm designing something for somebody who's sitting behind a desk and running reports. right? In the quiet of an office, maybe not a lot of time pressure because I've got it scheduled in.
Controlled environment, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And failing to, if I tried to design something for a kitchen team, assuming that their environment looked like that desk workers, it's not going to work. And it's just going to cause further frustration, and it's going to cause the tasks to break down and the work that they're trying to do to just fail. And I really don't want my users to fail at what they're trying to do.
Are there some designers though that, and maybe they don't do it intentionally, but that do design without thinking about that stuff?
Totally. Totally. Yeah, no, I think, I'm starting to see this in the invocation of AI in just about every technology right now, right? Just because we can do something technologically doesn't mean that we necessarily should. And how do you figure out if we should? You should understand the context and what that person's goals are. Why are they using that technology that you've created? Right. And I've written quite a bit on this where, just saying, hey, we've got to understand the job that people are trying to do and use technology supportively instead of throw technology at the problem and then hope that people get on board. That happens sometimes, don't get me wrong, right? But that is the distinct minority of experiences, as opposed to kind of really what reflects more of our everyday lives.
So this really speaks to, and this is a big deal for me. I find this really important, and something I love about the design community is their whole this focus on research, on and it's the research that puts that brings out the context, that
It
shows us the
does.
context.
It does.
And this is something that I've often found, for example, the customer experience management world struggles with. They don't do that. And I know some of it's because of pushback from business leaders. Business leaders don't want to go and do that research. They don't want to pay for the research. They don't want
Yeah.
to all that. So how can that community learn from the design community better how to do that research and bring context to the picture? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And let me be clear, we're not immune from pushback from leadership, right?
Sure.
What we hear frequently, even in the digital design world, is you've got to do that more quickly. Do you have enough users? That's funny. You only spoke with this many. How can you possibly discern trends or patterns or anything from there? That's too much money. It's too esoteric. It's too detailed, right? These are all criticisms that I've heard over the years about why we shouldn't be researching. What's our alternative, right? What is our alternative to that, right? If we're saying design, it's important to understand context in order to effectively design anything, services, products, digital tools, it doesn't matter. You've got to understand that context. How are we going to gain understanding of the context otherwise? One of the alternative paths that I'm actually working on is introducing metrics that can be reporting back to us on a regular basis, right? And I know that I work on the business to business software side, so we have a little bit different focus maybe than your average e-commerce site might. Different business goals, different reasons that we're building this technology, but this is something that I think the commerce side of the house is doing really, really well in terms of tracking user behavior. Now, we're going to get into a conflict at some point because I don't like that as a user, and I'll turn off all the cookies and the tracking mechanisms that I possibly can. But in aggregate, there still is value if I see people are spending too much time in a particular location where I wouldn't expect them to, right? That's pointing to me saying, hey, there might be a point of friction here. Let's go investigate. So maybe it isn't going out. It's not always going out. It's a cumulative effect, right? There is that field research, there's that study, there's usability testing in our world, et cetera. But then there's also looking at the data. And you can even I've been doing this recently working with my support teams. Hey, what do the problems look like? And talking to my customer experience team, what's our NPS score for this particular area? Because we do have that data and using that as baseline. So I think it's not just as simple as you need to get out into the field and do your research. I think it's bigger than that. And being able to say we need to make data-informed decisions And what I found is when you say it that way, very few senior leaders are going to argue with you when you're able to phrase it that way. And then you just have to widen the aperture on what does data count as? How what are we going to consider as data here?
Well, so this kind of leads to the second question, or maybe you've answered it in a
Perfect.
way. But
Okay.
the second question is, what is the problem out there that necessitates being purposefully human? Why is it that,
Oh,
what's
God.
the problem we're solving for with purposefully human? And
Yeah.
why do we need it? In other words, if I were a business leader and I came to you and said, look, we make widgets. I really
Yeah.
don't care. Why
Right.
should I care? We make widgets. The widgets work. People want them. Why should I care? Why should I be purposefully human? Whatever that
Exactly.
is.
Exactly. Well, and I'm not going to quote statistics because there's a lot out there. I think it was a one of the more recent ones I found was actually, and I think this is quoted in one of my articles, McKinsey, I believe it was either McKinsey or Bain, one of the two, pointed out all of the business success metrics and the changes in, revenue uplift and all those things, right, that senior leadership often worries about, gaining market share, increasing revenue, increasing sales, right? All of these things rise as a result of user-centered, or if we extend it here, human-centered practices. Okay, but so what, right? The challenge, I think, is that for us to get out and find the data in order to make the data-informed experiences, that takes time. And there's, I think it all boils down to time, because if I were to ask a senior leader in any organization, do you want to increase your market share and increase your user retention and increase your revenue and your sales and all these things? There wouldn't be a single person who would say no. And then if I said, well, here's what it'll cost, and we start talking in terms of time, right? That's where the friction begins to occur. So I think, to circle back around, why do we need it? How do we make it happen? It does come back down to the truly a cost-benefit analysis. And in order, I think, to be successful at that, it requires development of craft. And this is a team that I'm using frequently on my team. When we talk about the word craft, it's really just being an expert at what you do. And so when you have the opportunity to spend a lot of time in a particular domain area, you gain expertise and you are become able to anticipate. And then you can run a series of short experiments or test small hypotheses at a time to just make sure that you're kind of staying within those guardrails to be able to move forward. So I think if I'm answering the question properly, kind of how do we get here from here and why does it matter? It begins to look like that.
That is so interesting, Lori, because the idea of craft. Because if you look at the history of the Western world, anyway, beginning with the Industrial Revolution and then with the rise of industrial corporations, we've been on a never-ending campaign to eliminate craft.
Yeah.
What we've been doing is standardizing and making things
Mechanizing.
efficient.
Yeah.
And instead of talking to real humans, we're going to create personas,
Yeah.
and things like that. And what you're arguing for, if I understand, is we have to rediscover the craft of our work. Because if we don't do that and we allow the continuing, because I think what's happening in AI, if we allow organizations to continuously spiral down to the lowest cost per widget and not take craft and humanity into account, because craft is very much a human-centered idea, right?
It is.
You
It
know,
is.
it's you know, you know, you don't hire a machine to do craft work. You
No.
hire a human. So that, sorry to interrupt, Neil, but I just couldn't help
Oh,
when
no.
Neil's when Lori said that to jump in and notice that.
Yeah.
You've
But
brought up this has brought up a ton of things in me.
We'll try to attack some of them. Okay.
okay.
One of them, this idea of craft, and this has something that bothers me about AI, and that people don't recognize about AI enough, to me, is that AI is a looks for patterns, and it
That's
looks at the past. It is all
does.
It all looks at the past. It's not forward thinking, really, because it can't. It's not like humans. I can envision a fantastic world, and nobody even has to. Nobody prompts me or asks me. I can close my eyes and go, I can imagine this thing, right? And I'll never forget when I was a kid. My brother read me a. He didn't read me a story once. I was little. He was older, and he sat there and he was babysitting me, and he told me a bedtime story, and he just made it up.
Crafted
And it
a
was the
story for you.
greatest story ever. Now, I later came to find that a lot of it came out of Lord of the Rings, came out of other stuff, but it was magical. And nobody prompted him. He didn't have a prompter sitting there going, da da da, tell me a story about da 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 da, right? AI works that way. It looks at the past and it says, okay, what are all the patterns here? And let's put the patterns together and make something. This is where craft comes in, because
It does.
craft is about that. Craft is about looking forward and saying, what's the vision? I have a vision. I can see something else. And I'm interested in, this is a long, I know I'm going
It's all
long,
good.
but I'm interested in when you said something to the effect, well, we've touched on the idea of sameness. You know, the industrial age runs through a machine and dick, 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 and all the widgets look the same. But are we perhaps going back in time to a place where, because people want so much personalization, that we've got to figure out ways that we can personalize things? We can make things that aren't just the same widget for everybody. Maybe there's a basic foundation that's the same, but it changes. How do you, from a design perspective, how do you deal with that?
I'm going to give you the classic UX answer. Ready for this? It depends. It does depend. And I know, it's a running joke. I mean, that's more or less a meme in the UX world at this point. Somebody asks you a question, what's the best answer for this? It depends. What does it depend on? It depends on the context, and it depends on the user, right? I can't. And what I will say, as much as I've talked about AI and kind of said, hey, wait a minute, maybe we need to pump the brakes a little bit with what we're doing here. I also really believe, and I've seen firsthand, ways that AI can be tremendous when it comes to enhancing human experience. So to that end, and to address that question, how can we focus on personalization more quickly? To your point, AI is a tool. It reads data really quickly, faster than a human possibly can, and it can make these predictions. And I'll come back to this one in a minute because I have an analogy I like to use here. But it has to that has to be only one part of the solution. There has to be that person, the craft laid on top of it to say, so what does this mean? And that's where I'm not sure that people are actually taking the time to figure out that next step. It goes from straight from, well, the AI algorithm said this, therefore this is the answer. And there's no critical thinking, there's no interpretation, there's no stopping for a moment saying, does this make sense? And let me give you an example. The way that I've explained to people how AI works, who are kind of unfamiliar with it, if you have a pet, you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about here. I have a cat who's frequently around, but she will not come while I'm talking on a call. But as soon as she hears me say, okay, goodbye, and then the little blip of the song, she surfaces. Also, my dog, when I go to a particular drawer in my kitchen, in a particular cabinet, he will come running because that is the sign, or that is the pattern that I follow when I get his leash. We're going to go somewhere, right? So, when you start to look at that scenario specifically, the dog misinterpreting the cues, right? Because in that same cabinet, there's a drawer where I keep my tape, right? So, I'll open up that drawer to get a piece of tape, and the dog comes running because he thinks we're going somewhere, right? And it's such a classic example of misinterpretation of the pattern analysis. And that, for no other reason, is why we need to keep the human in the loop part of that equation when we're figuring out what to do with the analysis of all this data and the discovery of all these patterns. Because otherwise, we're going to wind up like the dog running to the cabinet for a piece of tape, which makes no sense.
It's Pavlovian is a kind of thing,
It is.
right?
It really
Yeah.
is. It really is. And I think, imagine AI as like the smartest, fastest pattern analyzing dog that you've ever met. Are they going to get it right every single time? No.
And sometimes it gets things that are like, what the hell is this?
Right.
This isn't answering my question. This is, it doesn't, it's not without error. It's not infallible. You ask AI a question or you put in some sort of prompt and it comes back and it's like, wait a minute, that's not what I was aiming at. That's not exactly what I'm looking for. And the unfortunate thing, going back to something you said a minute ago, is there are people who just say, well, there it is.
That's the answer. Let's take it.
Well, it's not
No.
hard to imagine drawing a conclusion that all dogs will come when you open the drawer in the kitchen.
Exactly. It comes back to critical thinking and identification of logical fallacies and not being afraid to take a poke at them when necessary. Right. And that's something where I think experienced professionals are great because at the end of the day, we're here for the people who are interacting with our services and products, right?
So,
The technologists are focused on building technology. The product people are focusing on creating things that people will buy or use. We're here to make sure that they're working for the people for which they're intended.
but I think that, and you're bringing up, I hear there's a subtext here to me. I'm hearing, and you almost said it. Don't be afraid to be human.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
Exactly.
we're kind of building this world right now. When you go on public, any social media, and everybody's talking about AI, it's almost, you almost kind of get pushed aside when you start saying, well, wait a minute, what about humans? What about the, and there's this almost this fear being created of being, well, I don't want to talk about that because that's not the thing. We don't talk about being human because it's cooler to talk about AI. And I think what you're saying is, no, we need to, we need to, and it's okay. In fact, we should be asking the questions about being human. And you did touch on one other thing, and I really liked it, where it seemed to me that you were saying there is craft in asking the questions.
Totally, because again, and I think that that comes back to our role as human-centered professionals, right? Implicit in this to me, and I realize not everybody's going to have the same background. We've all come from these different directions and different experiences and trainings and all of this, but the one thing that I think is core that I realized pretty early on and what allowed me to transition from my work in healthcare to my work in user experience was psychology. Right? At the end of the day, we're hardwired the same. But how we use our brains and how we react to the world is so nuanced and so varied that I can't possibly take a room full of people and say, you all are all the same, beyond the fact that, I'm assuming by virtue of the fact that they've showed up, they are in fact living, breathing humans. Like it kind of has to stop there. Maybe we can talk about there's a shared interest in a topic because they're all here. But hopefully that illustrates the point that you can't just take a group of people and go, these people are all the same, right? And this, I mean, this just, I'm happy to hop on the soapbox, but I'm going to resist. This just kind of underscores so much of what's going on in this world with this concept of otherism, right? And when in reality, if we keep peeling back those layers, we are all the same at a very basic level.
It's kind of like saying we all have fingerprints, but all the fingerprints are different.
Exactly. And I think that that's where the role and the responsibility of the human-centered professional comes in to understand my fingerprint being different than yours might mean that we're going to have a different experience when we start touching smooth surfaces, right? Or picking up glassware or something like that, right? Incorporated in here is the concept of accessibility and people with different abilities and all of these things.
All right, we have to get to the third big
Okay,
question.
perfect.
Third big question. What can we do to be more to be more purposeful human? What can we practically do to be more purposeful human?
I think you stated something like this at the beginning of the conversation, right? Recognizing the iceberg, that people are icebergs, and that when somebody walks into an engagement or a situation, there is so much going on in that person's world, inner and outer. We have to respect that, and we have to be empathetic to that, and we have to be intentional in slowing down a moment, right? I'll give you a case in point. I was driving yesterday. There was a guy who was trying to squeeze into traffic. I was heading to an important medical appointment. I didn't realize until after the fact that he was trying to move in, and I went past him, and he's beeping and waving and making hand gestures at me. And I thought, you know what? He doesn't understand what's going on in my head right now. He doesn't understand how I'm feeling and what I'm thinking about this medical appointment. He just sees this lady in this type of car who just cut him off from his perception. I get it. I get how he can be mad, but those are the kinds of kind of gut reactions that we really need to check ourselves on. When you realize you start getting into that kind of mode, go, hold on a minute, wait a minute. What are three stories I can tell myself about what's going on here before I just assume that lady's a jerk, right?
I had a similar life experience and epiphany. Earlier, if somebody cut me off, I was the one with the gestures, and
The horn and the, yeah.
no one's going to cut me off. And then,
Right.
for some reason, I came to another point of view, which is I don't know, to your point, what's
Yeah.
going on in that person's life. And now I let everybody in front of me. And the way I reconcile that with younger me is, yeah, maybe one person in 100 is being a you know what, but many of those people are dealing with something that is provoking them to be in urgent mode.
Yeah.
And I'll never know what it is, but if I can be part of them, well, two levels to that. If I can be part of them getting there a couple of minutes early, whatever it is. And the other thing is, if I can not get in an accident with this person, I can really get out of their way and not delay them from where they're headed.
I love what you just pointed out there, because I think that there's a second part to this equation, which is that willingness to give comfort in whatever that looks like, right? And so again, if I bring it back to my career, right, I want people to be successful using whatever I'm designing. And I can list off, a list of products as long as my arm that I've been involved in my career. But that is a single underlying goal. I want people to be successful. And when people are successful doing that, then the organizations that are creating those tools also become successful. And I think that that's a key difference in this human-centered professionalism, because the technologists and the business folks often come at this from a different perspective, not because they're bad people, not at all, but just because they have a different focus, they have a different role.
They have their own iceberg.
They do. They do.
Just, really, that's what it comes down to. They have a different back. They also have a different focus. We all know, people that are more engineer type people, they don't tend to be as warm and fuzzy as other people. But that's not a bad thing. It's just the way they are. It's just what they,
Exactly.
it's the world they come from.
Exactly.
You immediately brought up something in my head that. And it's a thing that I don't like about those stoplight cameras, the cameras at the intersections that take your picture if you.
Cattle tail cameras,
And
yeah.
here's the thing I don't like. If there were a police officer actually sitting at that intersection, they would be able to see that, oh, this guy went through the light because there was somebody on his tail. And if he had slammed on the brakes, it would have probably killed both of them.
That's right.
But that camera can't see that. And I think we tend to be that camera sometimes.
Totally. Totally. Because guess what you just described? The context of the situation.
Exactly. Wow, this is
All
it's
you
coming
take
full
is a
circle. You're
snapshot.
doing this. You're making this
Exactly.
happen.
Well, thank you. Yeah. No, if you only take that snapshot, you don't have that context. And that's why, when in my work, when I'm working with teams and I'm working with, we've got an intern this summer. The importance of storytelling as part of your craft, the importance of story building. And this comes back to what you said at the beginning about your brother, right? The importance of being able to relate to each other in different ways. One of the things that I'll do when I facilitate large group sessions is a thing called solving the dog problem, which is basically encouraging people through a quick little exercise to articulate when I talk about a dog, what the dog is that they see in their mind's eye. And it's fascinating because when you do that and you go around the room, everybody's thinking of different dogs, Pekingese, Saint Bernard, German Shepherd, it doesn't matter. But and we're here to discuss this big hairy business topic or this big technologically difficult product. And then we're going to be surprised and frustrated when we're speaking past one another. Well, it's because we didn't stop to articulate, hey, the version of the dog that I'm seeing in my head is this. What's yours? Let's get it together and figure it out. Right?
So, hey, we could sit here and do this for
Indeed.
quite a while, and something tells me we will at some point. I'm just going to call you and say let's chat for 2 hours.
Anytime.
But I want to ask Jerry, and I have put together three burning questions.
It's a lightning round.
We
All
got
right.
10 minutes. We got 10 minutes to do
Okay,
that, to
good.
do your burning questions. So, burning question number one: what is something that you see that is purposefully inhuman that we've all just accepted?
Yeah, I've got a great one here. This happened this week. Nothing in life is certain. What's the saying? Nothing in life is certain but death and taxes. So this involves taxes. We got our estimated property tax bill from the county this week, and it didn't actually have a number on it. It had, it didn't, it, there was a number that said estimated tax owed, but for only one line item. And then there was only one other line item. And when I went back and looked at last year's, there were seven line items. And so there was
You got the
there's a
big
local.
discount this year.
Well, you know, it looked like I was only going to owe $140, which I know is absolutely not true, as much as I might like it. And I happen to be on Facebook, and there's a community Facebook group, and the guy who leads that community said, "Hey, listen, I know these just came out. I know there's a lot of commotion." He's a local leader in the business community. He said, "I know there's a lot of confusion about this. Let's start a list of questions. If you are part of the government in the county, please speak up because there's a lot of confusion here." And there were some people who immediately went to, you know, kind of all of the negative assumptions and all of this and all of that. But I think, you know, I actually did sit down and pasted in a copy of last year's and pasted in a copy of this one. And I was like, I asked, where did all the rest of this go? Where did the calculation for the amount of money that I'm going to have to pay toward the schools go? Because there wasn't any final number there. Where did these other items go? And it came up in the conversation that this format was dictated to the county. They had to send it out this way. Exactly. And I said, well, who did that? Who did that? Who said that? Because, you know, I get it. These, you know, the folks in the tax office, they did what they were supposed to do, but somebody somewhere made a very inhuman decision to send information out to meet a deadline that had been set somewhere that was imperfect or incomplete information that now is causing all this chaos. Very, very not human in all of this. And it's just an interesting illustration of how sometimes we're focusing on the wrong things when we're making decisions. And I get it, when we're kind of dealing in the government space, there are rules and regulations and laws and things that are dictating the way that certain things happen. But I really am curious if anybody's raised their hand and said, hold on a minute, this is going to be a mess if we send this way. And I don't know the answer to that question. So check back with me. I'll see if I can find out.
Have nothing to say to that other than I fully understand where you're coming from. I mean, if I got that, I would be one, I would just go, just pay the 140. But
Right.
then, but then, but then I know that we'd get a letter or something saying, well, you actually owe this and you owe us back money or something for that. It would be,
Yeah,
hey,
yeah.
wait a minute.
Exactly. And the appraised value of my house increased significantly. So I am estimating, I am prepared for, and I actually sat down and did for the school tax calculations. Because I did include the millage percentage rate on there. I did that calculation. And of course, because the appraised value
Sure,
is higher
yeah.
at the millage, that number is going to be higher. But I guarantee you, not everybody sat down and took that time to figure it out.
And
Hence
some
my
people
question,
can't.
thinking.
Neil, you
Exactly.
might have been laughing at heart when you said that, but I have seen bills, both from government and commercial organizations, where it says, if this bill is wrong, you are still responsible
Right, exactly. That's what I was getting at. Yeah.
for the correct amount. And you look at that and you just shake your head, and it's like, not only in Lori's case was all this chaos caused, but somehow I have to divine what my bill is and send that amount of money. And if I get it wrong, maybe I send them too much. Good luck getting it back.
Right, exactly. And I've got some providers that are like, "Hey, listen, just put your card on file. It'll be super easy this way now." Because I've tried this before. I don't have a clear recourse into challenge what they're telling me what I owe. No way.
Yeah, all of that,
I'm not going to set that up on auto pay. It's just not.
this is all just inhuman.
It
Yeah,
is. It
really.
really is. And I
It's
think,
there's no context to your point, because there's a whole bunch of different people with different kind of icebergs floating out there, and they're not looking at, the elderly person who doesn't understand it in the first place,
And who's on a fixed
or
income?
yeah,
Right.
whatever, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I
And
got to get the
money.
question. I got to get question number two.
Go for it.
Sorry. Didn't mean to
All
cut you off.
good.
Question number two. Think back to COVID days. I know that was that's not a good thought
Whole
for
half
most
decade
people.
ago. Yeah.
But COVID changed a lot of things for all of us, right? And when we were all going through lockdown and everything, for a lot of people, it caused disconnection. But in some cases, it actually caused connection for some people. There were ways that they connected because they found new ways to connect, and it broadened their community. So I'm just curious, what about you, and how has that impacted you?
That's actually an interesting question. I was working remotely prior to COVID. So when the world shut down and we all had to convert to remote work, for me personally, it wasn't that much of an adjustment. But also recognize I was working for a different organization than I had a different team. Also recognizing in my team that we were all going a little bit stir crazy. We started to do silly things. We had one day where we showed up in costumes. We had one day where I brought a chicken from the backyard to the meeting. We had, I mean, it was just these things just to kind of keep things interesting and varied because I think that that was that sense of being stir crazy and constrained and restricted in some way, really was starting to have an impact on people. I'm fortunate to live out in the country, so we had plenty of room to get outside and be outside. But if we lived in the suburbs where we had been living previously, we wouldn't have had those options. And I can guarantee you, I would have been absolutely climbing the walls, just to try and get outside. And so, I think part of it was recognizing, in myself and then also in my team, when we needed to change something up in order to keep things novel and interesting, because it was just such a tremendously stressful time.
I know for me, one of the things that, and Jerry, I think you and I have talked about this, is for me, it disconnected me from people that I probably needed to disconnect from, but
That too.
reconnected me with some people that I found that I needed to connect with, and the different avenues for being able to do that. 'Cause I have a lot of friends that are not in anywhere close, and the whole Zoom thing, as many people who decry it, I kind of go, well, wait a minute. It allowed me to connect with people that I mean, Jerry and I connected largely because of it. We never would have probably may have not connected without it. Jerry was kind enough and graceful enough to reach out to me after we had an argument online about something and said, hey, we need to get to know each other better. And we
Wait,
did.
that's fake news, Neil. No way, that's fake news. We didn't argue.
Well, we didn't. I wouldn't say we
Yeah.
argued. We had a difference of opinion on
Cool.
something. That was it. Anyway, let me get to the last question. You have 2 minutes.
Right.
2 minutes to answer this.
Round.
If you could give advice to anyone, about something they could do to be more purposefully human, what would that be?
I might have to spend a minute and a half thinking about this one because I'm ready for something profound that I haven't said already.
Well, you can recover old
No,
ground, though.
I think it is. I think it does come back to that point of slow down for a minute. So if you're in a situation where you're just fine that you're reacting to somebody, and you know this, I get it. Being in tune with yourself and following your intuition and doing these things doesn't come naturally for all people. But if you find yourself in a situation where you're thinking, you know what, that person, right? About the time you start pointing the finger, stop a minute. Tell yourself three stories of what's going on. And I received this coaching from a colleague years ago, and I found it so immensely helpful, right? About the time I start to get aggravated with whatever is happening, tell yourself three stories as to what's going on here. And it just that kind of momentary pause and reset opens up possibilities for alternative perspectives. And it just tends to diffuse a lot within myself.
Love that. I love the idea of three stories. Tell yourself
Yeah,
that
what a
right there
great,
would slow you. That slows you down right
yeah.
there. You got to think up three. Well, what
What a
three
great
things could be
tip. Yeah,
happening
what a
here?
great
It
tip.
does. It shortcuts the emotional reaction and kind of forces you back into logical mode, right?
Well, it's
Can't
the way
wait for
our
the book,
brains
Laurie.
work. It takes time to make up three stories. So that allows your more rational, bigger picture thinking brain to engage. And you don't do something that you're going to regret later.
Exactly. And I may still count as that person's a jerk as one of my three stories. Don't get me wrong. Like, I am not, you know, altruistic in my story making, but not all three stories are that person's a jerk times three, right? There are other variations of that. And I think at some point my training as a human takes over and is like, well, hold on a minute, give them the benefit of the doubt. Okay, well, maybe they're not a jerk. Maybe they're just late for whatever's going on. Maybe, you know, something happened, their car didn't start this morning or something. That's fine.
Well,
Right.
maybe, and you know what? Maybe they are a jerk, but that doesn't mean you have to be.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly. That's
Well
why
said.
I'm not always entirely altruistic with all three of my stories. Like there, I do reserve space for that person's just a jerk. I mean, you know, like it
They
happens.
do exist. They do exist. They're
Acknowledging
out
the
there.
fact that you're a jerk, that's fine, right? Don't bring it to me. Yeah.
Well, Lori, I have to tell you, this has been fabulous.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
You are just wow, what a you're just like a ray of all kinds of wonderfulness there. So, and I can't wait for Laurie's book of context.
Oh gosh.
The Bible, the Context Bible by Laurie Gray.
Bible. Wow. All right. That's big. Okay.
Because
Title,
it so
great
much, but
icebergs I have known. What's
so
that?
much of that of what we've talked about floats around that, you know,
Oh, it
about
does.
context and considering context. And that being such a big part of being purposefully human, of that intentionality, you know. So I all I can I thank you so much for being with us
For
and
having me.
sharing stories with us and telling us, teaching us, and all of that. Jerry, what do you have to say?
Oh no, I want to double down on the thanks. What Lori is a special deep thinker on these topics, and I'm glad we had an opportunity to have her on the program.
I appreciate the invite, guys. And anytime you want to talk about this, call me because I find it helpful, right? The more that I'm able to restate this, the more my perspectives and my opinions and my recommendations tend to distill down into clarity.
Before we send you back to the stuff, other stuff you do,
Gotcha.
what's a way people can find out more about you or reach out to you or whatever?
My website is laurigray.com. Laurie, Laurie, Gray, Gray, because there's 100 different combinations of those two words, .com. Or look for me on LinkedIn. Happy to connect with people.
Well, please do that, folks. And thank you so much, Lori. Look forward to talking to you again sometime soon.
Great. Have a great afternoon, guys.
Thank
Bye.
you, Lori.
So, Jerry, wow, she was what a great suggestion for a guest, Jerry. She's a
Yes, now you can
fantastic.
see why I was high on having her on.
Well, what were some of the takeaways for you?
Well, as you saw and heard, I've always appreciated how Lori thinks about things. She just has this I, for lack of a better term, she has a beautiful mind that just not only can synthesize so much data and ideas and concepts, but can then articulate them. I'm glad you asked her to how people could find her, because you'll also find on her LinkedIn page the citations of the series she wrote about artificial intelligence, which I highly, highly recommend. It's a very, very thoughtful series of essays. I think part of her magic does come from the fact that she has a healthcare background, which she actually touched on. I find anyway that people that have done some, like Lori, that have done some type of service in their lives, are more aligned with purposefully human thinking because they've had someone in their care. And we throw around a lot of terms, right? Empathy and what have you, but you can't read about it in a textbook. You have to live it. When you've been a healthcare professional like Lori was, you lived it. You understand it intellectually, you understand it conversationally, as in what your people in your care and their families say to you, but then you also feel it. It's in your soul. Once you feel it, you can't unfeel it, as opposed to people that have never had that experience. It's more intellectual, and there's nothing wrong with that. But to Lori's point, you have to understand the context of where people are coming from. The last thing I really, really took off on was this idea of restoring craft to our conversations. That is, boy, I'm going to spend a lot of time thinking about that, because if you think about, which I know you do, I do, I know Lori does, many others in the purposefully human community. If you think about what's going on in the world today, it really cries out for the human point of view. And craft, if you go back into the history of craft, is an inherently human activity. When you are, when you think about all the different forms of speech that are based on the word craft, crafting, which is, the verb form, they all involve humans making something. So it pulls in your concept of being able to envision the future. It pulls in one's experience and one's ability to appreciate the work of others. It may also be a collective activity, making a quilt, for example. It is, and you can probably commission a commercial manufacturer to make you a quilt. But there aren't six or eight people sitting around chatting and sharing experiences and building that thing together. That's a takeaway. I highlighted it so vigorously in my notes that I wore through to the next page, in my diary. I'm going to sit with that one a lot.
Well, a few things that I got out of this were the power of context, and that empathy largely relies on context. And empathy, I know it's overused these days, largely I think in ways that people they don't really understand what empathy is. But without context, it's hard. I don't see how you could have empathy for someone. I love the idea of not being afraid to be human. We live in a world full of technology and technology this, technology that, and everything's ruled by technology. But you know what? When at the end of the day, it's humans. I actually posted something this morning that said, you need to connect with more humans because believe me, on your deathbed, you don't want to be surrounded by computers.
Oh,
You
I
want to be
saw that.
surrounded by people, you know?
That was pretty sharp.
And she really did bring up this fact that context matters much more than we recognize. And to slow down and consider and be considerate of people's context. Ask those three questions or make up those three stories to help you maybe get to bring the human into it, you know, to have a heart, you know, all of that. So, and I know you mentioned to me earlier that there something maybe down the pike that might be coming that we might do if you want to mention that.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for reminding me. So, one of the innovations that's come to mind, because in Purposefully Human, we like to engage. You know, it's as you can tell from the format and style of this program. But what we're trying to do is be, you know, a place where people come and talk about things and work out things that are on their mind. And so, one of the things that we are going to do, I know we're recording this, so people are going to be watching this at some date after this. But when we release this, we will also be announcing an opportunity to talk to Lori interactively. You know, in history, this was called, you know, the salon, you know, where you would actually sit around. We're not exactly sure, you know, where that will be hosted or what have you, but. But keep your eye on the LinkedIn page for an announcement about that, because if you enjoyed hearing what Lori said today and thought she had was an interesting conversationalist on these topics, it's an opportunity to engage, share, and then collectively build our purposefully human world.
That sounds fantastic. I really look forward to doing that and being part of that. That'll be a lot of fun. So I'm going to sign us off. And again, thank Laurie for being with us. And Jerry, thank you so much for co-hosting and for inviting Laurie to be with us. And just let everybody know that we'll be posting this on the Purposefully Human website. You'll be able to see the video on the Purposefully Human YouTube channel. And everybody have a great day and go out there and do some good for the world.
Thank you, Neil. You take care of yourself.
You too.